You're listening to Game Play on TSN 1050. We're going all in on the coverage. You can bet on it.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Game Play. You're listening to the second hour of the show and just a wild, crazy, fun weekend in sports. And we'll get back into all things NFL. Oh, I forgot to play the Stephen A. Smith sound in the last segment. We'll get into that on Rodgers losing the 49ers. We'll play Aaron and Brady and what's going to happen with them and their future. But first, with the Toronto Raptors and the Friday and Sunday. Friday, sneaky important game. They beat Washington 109-105. And good for the Raptors. That was a good and bad game. Like, they came back from being down 30-20. Hold on to that theme for a moment. So they were down early. But then that collapse in the fourth quarter. Raps were up 99-86, 7:14 to go after an OG Anunoby layup. Then you blink 6 minutes later, and a Montrezl Harrell dunk ties it at 102-102. They go on a 16-3 run. But then Fred VanVleet, clutch, hits a three-pointer with a minute left, and that is a lead that they would not relinquish. Scotty Barnes, who had a lousy game against Portland, was great against Washington. 27 points, 8 rebounds. The weird thing is, and again, no one's going to remember this, but in the fourth quarter, and something to keep an eye on, Washington went much more zone, and Scotty Barnes just had 2 shot attempts in the fourth quarter. He had 27 points in the first 3 quarters, 0 in the fourth, but it didn't matter. They held on to win. But that Sunday game, and Austin, I'm glad I didn't see it. Because on a night without Damian Lillard and Norm Powell, Portland up 34, up 64-34 at the break. They go on to beat the Raptors 114-105. That first quarter, VanVleet and Trent Jr. combined to shoot 1 of 14. But on a night without Lillard and Norm Powell, you've got to win those games.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I did watch that. I saw my second screen, so kind of watching it. But I definitely did pay attention to it. And they started that game so flat. I have never seen a basketball team start a game with less energy, and especially a team like the Toronto Raptors, where the one thing you can count on night to night is effort. And they just started that game with absolutely no effort. And it's just such a weird team, Matt. I can't put my finger on it. It's like they play up and down to the level of their competition is what I can see, basically. And they saw no Powell. They saw no Lillard. And it looks like they thought they could take the night off. But, you know, Portland Trailblazers is still a bunch of very solid NBA players on that other side. So it's just a really, really tough team. I don't know if that's the no-home crowd. I don't know what that factor is. Maybe we can ask Eric Kareen about that. But
oh, we will.
It was just such a weird, weird start. And then to come back and to play full court press to come back, it's an interesting strategy by Nick Nurse for a team that is already shorthanded, already has 5 of their starters are the most played unit in the NBA. I just don't see long-term this paying off, and I don't see long-term where this Raptors team fits in. I really have no idea on the pulse of them whatsoever.
Okay, so on the minutes thing, I was thinking about this for a moment. Like, all of us were kind of all on the same wavelength. What are they doing with all those minutes? It's going to hurt them. We look at fourth quarters, you know, some of the recent losses, and we go, see, that's it. That's it, all those minutes. But does Nick Nurse deserve the benefit of the doubt? And also, do the players deserve the benefit of the doubt? Because it's not like the players are sitting there going, no, coach, don't put me in. And Nick Nurse is like, get out there, Siakam, or I'll punch you. You know, it's not like a Bruce Arians situation. So Nick Nurse is a good coach. The players know their bodies. The players are fine with these minutes. Should we be okay with it? Or is this still a case of, you know what, and in cases like this, maybe you can't trust the coach or the players? Like, I don't know. Like, at some point, I'm thinking to myself, maybe we just give the players and the coach the benefit of the doubt.
That's a really good point by you that I haven't even crossed my mind giving anyone ever the benefit of the doubt. But you're absolutely right. Like, if anyone has deserved it, it's Nick Nurse, because the way that he coaches his team and just how much these Raptors care. There's no unprofessionalism on this team whatsoever.
No.
So if they are okay playing these heavy minutes, maybe we should be too. My concern, though, is, Matt, like, no athlete's ever going to say, I don't want to play, like you're saying. But your body breaks down. You can't predict injuries. Injuries are arbitrary. So And the more stress you put on your body, you know, health science major over here, the more likely you are to get injured, right?
There's no way you're a health science major because you work at sports radio.
No, that was a bad joke by myself. But I just don't know how sustainable it is going forward. It worries me. That was a bad loss yesterday, but I fully expect them to come out and win next game, honestly, because they're playing someone.
Nope. Did you drop out for a second there?
I did drop out for a second there.
How do you drop out? Right? You're in the studio.
I run the thing. That's crazy.
Yeah. If you drop out, what good am I? What am I going to do? I'm sitting in my living room. By the way, you can't see this. It is now dumping with snow. When did this happen? I thought we had the snow. It has been. Oh, you be careful. You be careful, my friend. You drive safe. Okay, because right now it's snowing, and I don't know how much of it's coming down or how much is wind, but there's a lot of snow that's hitting Toronto for the last, like, 45 minutes.
Yeah, I'm happy I got to the studio earlier today. On my previous point, though, the Raptors' next two games are the Hornets and the Bulls, two good teams, and I fully expect them to come out and compete, maybe win the games, but that loss against Portland's so disappointing because the Raptors are just always going to play to the level of their competition, I think, and I'm not sure what type of team that makes them then.
They beat the reigning champs. They beat the Bucks. They nearly beat the Suns, the Heat, and the Mavs. They had leads in those games late. Each of those games were lost by 5 points or fewer. Then they get blown out to Detroit and an embarrassing loss to Portland. It is a weird team. For the Chicago game, keep an eye on if Zach LaVine is going to be playing. I know Lonzo Ball is out, but the Bulls, you know, they're dealing with some of their injuries. But hey, it's, you know, hey, we get to see DeMar DeRozan. And you know what? The one final thought on minutes, then we'll move on the Raptors. And the best point you made there is that, yes, obviously players and coaches deserve the benefit of the doubt, but sometimes when do you have to protect the player from the player? You know, if you get guys
or
that are really competitive.
Or the coach from the coach. Because I think Nick Nurse is an incredibly competitive guy as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Actually, let's hear quickly from the coach. Just sort of to your point, talking about the level of energy to start that game.
Really, we had really super low energy. You know, just again, it was, and usually, you know, we'll try everybody and anybody and keep moving guys around and try to find a unit that works, and we couldn't really get that done either. You know, usually we can get off to a 16-4 bad start, but usually, you know, you end up getting to the half and you're saying, okay, it's only 9 or 11 or something. And you're like, we're actually a lot better off than we probably should be or whatever. But tonight it was a lot worse than it probably should have been, to be honest. So, we just a whole kind of collectively, not ready to go. Starters off the bench, anybody tonight.
Okay, he meandered. He wanted less energy. That answer by Nick Nurse or the Raptors in the first quarter.
I think that answer by Nick Nurse right there, absolutely. He sounds down after every loss. He really does.
He does.
Personally.
He does, which maybe then you do get nervous about all the minutes being played. But then again, this just goes to the idea of, A, do you, you know, how much benefit of the doubt do you give the players and the coach? All right, let's go from low energy to good energy. Let's hear from Stephen A. Smith. The San Francisco 49ers with Jimmy Garoppolo was horrible. Receivers dropping passes early. They go on to beat Green Bay 13-10 in Green Bay. Here is Stephen A. Smith on Aaron Rodgers.
You Aaron Rodgers. You with Matt LaFleur. And you can't score more than 10 points at Lambeau Field in snowy conditions you're very, very familiar with. It's fun. I mean, I understand that San Francisco, Northern California ain't Southern California, but they ain't got to deal with the weather conditions that you're accustomed to. They rolled on into Lambeau Field, Green Bay, Wisconsin, where the only thing that's relevant is Aaron Rodgers and cheese. That's it. And somehow, some way, found a way to hold you to 10 points. It is the worst defeat of Aaron Rodgers' career, and it could not have come at a worse time, because after all that noise you made coming into the season, and then the noise you made by being the deliberate liar in chief with the whole immunization and all of that stuff, you got a playoff game. We threw all of that aside, and we said, all right, this is your time. Sure. This is your time, and you came up short. He could be handed the league MVP award Right. And nobody gives a damn.
How much do you think people were enjoying San Fran winning because you like a good underdog story? And how much of it was just everyone now hates Aaron Rodgers because of his verbal shenanigans when he was asked ages ago about getting vaccinated?
Oh, you mean Aaron regular season Rodgers? No, I think it's a lot of the vitriol is going because people don't like Aaron Rodgers as a person. The stat I saw going around, Matt, Blake Bortles and Aaron Rodgers since 2017 have the exact same amount of playoff wins. The exact same amount.
Yeah. Oh, boy, that's a tough one. By the way, I can do it again. I can read the text. We were able to figure out the technical issue. Wade writes in, terrible way to lose or great way to win. Most satisfying win to date as a Niners fan. Bye-bye, Rodgers, you bleep. Held the Super Bowl favorite and MVP to 10 points at home. The stat they should go on about is West Coast teams traveling to Green Bay being like two or anyway. Go Niners by Wade. I have to text us at 10:50:50, and I have to do a good job of reading the text first to myself before reading it on air. Paul K from Etobicoke, good chat on overtime. Going back a few decades, it was 2 10-minute periods. Is that true? No sudden death. That was the ultimate in extending the tension, but player safety now dictates. Someone from Peterborough writes in, NFL overtime rules are so bad. Two good teams, and it ends like that. Shame on you, NFL. I'm not going to go shame on you because the NFL, once again, entertained the hell out of us. And we have 400 great storylines, and there'll be so many good betting lines and prop bets for this week. And how much money do you think people won in that Buffalo-Kansas City game? Because everyone bet the over. And early on, it's like, oh, is this over going to hit? Because the drives are going on so long. But the overs hit. Every Mahomes and Allen bet had to hit.
They definitely hit. The funniest thing about that over in that game, actually, was if you got to the two-minute warning, you thought you were dead. You thought it was completely dead. And then you were good by 20 points.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. As for overtime, listen, that stinks. And the better result would have been give Buffalo a chance. And I know that. And I know the pushback, well, Buffalo's defense, they need to be able to do their job. Yes, except the difference is the Buffalo Bills defense at that point in the game is not the Buffalo Bills defense at the beginning of the game because both these teams, their defenses are gassed on both sides. If Buffalo had won that coin toss, I have no doubt in my mind they win that game. That Josh Allen and that offense is going to score. Gabriel Davis was wide open all game, over 200 yards, 4 touchdowns. He broke the ankles of some Kansas City defensive back, like wide open. There was wide open plays all over the place. And beyond that, like every time Josh Allen ran, you knew he's at least going to get 5 yards. And by the way, I hope Carlo isn't listening because, I mean, I was terrified by Allen, but I was rooting for the Chiefs. You know, I was hanging out with my buddy who's a Kansas City Chiefs fan. It was a KC household I was at last night. And again, the other point to everyone listening is that I hope you didn't watch that game alone. I hope you were out with friends, with some family. It's not like it to be at a party of 20 people. But we now live in a time and an age where people are going out less and less. And I think, you know, we're going to have that in our muscle memory, you know, where I think there are some people now that it's not about laziness, but I think some people are just more comfortable and fine with staying at home. And I hope that is not the case, especially when it comes to watching sports. Because that game last night, you needed to be with people.
Yeah, and it elevated it, honestly, being with people. And it was awesome. It was an awesome game. Now, Matt, I think I want to know, and the people want to know, your thoughts and feelings on Sean McDermott not squibbing at the end there. Do you think that makes a difference? Because I really don't. But it seems to be that's the point that everyone's hanging on to, that one extra, two extra seconds it might have taken off the clock. But if he just falls on it, fair catches it, the clock doesn't run. Kansas City starts ahead of the 25, and I think that was the thinking that McDermott had.
Yeah, my thing on it is, and I've seen a lot of stuff on Twitter that, you know, if you do the proper squib, then you're going to lose 4 or 5 seconds, and then Kansas City only has one play. And my thought is, at the end of that Mona Lisa of a football game, I am not we are on this earth for not that long, okay? And I am not going to expend too much emotional energy on should they have squibbed, meaning maybe Patrick Mahomes would only have had time for one play versus two plays.
Yeah,
in a game
you're right.
That great, I'm just not. You know, it's very simple. Should they have done the squib? Probably. At the time, I wasn't even thinking about it.
I mean, you also just need to stop them with 13 seconds, you know?
Yeah.
That's the bigger point, I think. At the time, I completely agree with you.
And most of the time, when you have only 13 seconds, you're not going to score.
No, and you shouldn't. And you shouldn't, especially against the number one rated defense in the NFL, which the Buffalo Bills were all year.
Yeah, which I never trusted. We talked about that last week.
Strength of schedule and everything.
Strength of schedule, bad quarterbacks. Not that they weren't a good defense. They were a good defense. But they never felt like this is the number. Like, no one ever looked at Buffalo and go, this is the number one defense. You know, that was never their calling card. Not even close.
No.
By the way, I'm sorry to bring up the Titans for a second, but are you, like, the one thing we were laughing at, because, you know, no one was going anywhere. We were stress drinking. Like, and the weird thing is, like, we definitely drank, like, you know, we drank more than I was expecting. At the end of the game, I was looking at my friend and his wife. I'm like, are you as stone cold sober as I am? Like, we were laughing at it because we were so into the game, and maybe it was the shrimp burrito, but I was so into the game. I did not feel any effect of any of the wine we were drinking.
No, not at all. I was partaking in a few beverages during the game, and I woke up the next morning more like emotionally drained than any sort of physical hangover whatsoever, because just the emotional toll of that was so heavy on my soul, more or less. But no, I fully locked in. The alcohol seemed to completely not even faze me. It was just a brutal loss. Just a brutal loss.
And then, funny, then on the other end, me and my buddy, after the game, I'm like, I need to have just one more drink and decompress and talk about what the hell we watched.
Yeah, so just talking about it for a half hour after, right? That was the best part.
God, I'm so sorry, Bills fans, because the worst part here is you're going to be constantly reminded of this. When there's a top 10 list, greatest games of all time, or anything like that, this is going to get brought up. Just like you still get to see Scott Norwood missing that field goal in Super Bowl 25, you are going to be reminded of this game.
Matt, for the fan base, really quick, we need to rank the levels of losing here. That loss last night, the Music City Miracle, Scott Norwood wide right.
Okay. Norwood wide right is absolutely number one. It's the Super Bowl. Buffalo was close to a 7-point favorite. Also, that is still the best Buffalo Bills team ever.
Is that the Hall Giants of Fame team that did it with the backup quarterback, too?
Jeff Hostetler.
Yeah,
they did that with a backup quarterback. The MVP of that game was a 33, 34-year-old running back, Otis Anderson. There were no, on that team, not a lot of Hall of Famers. You had basically Lawrence Taylor. You know, that was it. Mark Bavaro was, you know, nowhere near this peak of his career by 1990. And so that's the number one one, because that was the best Bills team. That 1990 Bills team, best team they've ever had. I would say number two was last night. Because the thing about the Music City Miracle is that Buffalo team with Rob Johnson, I don't think anyone thought that team was a true Super Bowl contender. This Bills team, they hold on with 13 seconds left. They're the favorite. They were going to open up as a 5.5-point favorite against the Bengals.
Yeah, and that would have been better, I think, to 7 as well.
Yeah. I think that one is second.
You're right. Is that the year where they replaced Doug Flutie, too, the Music City Miracle? That is an iconic moment in my life.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Back in 2000. By the way, don't be careful teeing me up with Super Bowl 25 Giants and Buffalo. I in my head, I'm like, oh, no, stop this. You're just going to wax on and on about that game. Hey, at least the Giants fired their general manager and coach, and they got a new GM. And he seems to have a good resume. He's obviously going to be better than Dave Gettleman. All right, on the other side, we'll hear from the Leafs coach Sheldon Keefe talking about Morgan Rielly, and we'll tell you about some interesting line changes going on that's coming up in a moment right here on Gameplay. Welcome back, everybody. This is Gameplay. I am your host, Matthew Kaz. Hey, the Leafs played. They beat St. Louis 3-1 on Saturday night. And listen, there's only going to be a couple times over the year where, you know, the Leafs game is going to be, it's not that it's going to be forgotten, but it's going to get less attention. Clearly, when you're going up against NFL playoffs, that's going to happen. But there is, like, here's the most important thing about that game. Is that they won. Now, I know that sounds about as captain obvious as it gets. But they win 3-1 in a kind of low event game. So the first thought is, oh, okay, well, you know what? In terms of story, in terms of headlines, it's not that big a deal. Except, think about how big a deal it would be today if the Leafs had lost, coming off of that disappointing loss to the Rangers. Leafs were up 3-1. If the Islanders had won that game 4-3, Leafs would have been the second topic. It would have been Bills, Chiefs, and then this, and it would have been close. But because they won the game, it actually becomes less of a story. But if it was going to be a big story if they lost, then doesn't it need to be a big story if they won, which they did? And now I'm starting to confuse myself. I'm now talking in circles and circles. On the ice, Peter Mrazek, 27 saves. And third period, Leafs outshot 15-4. Mrazek looked really good. Guy they signed to a three-year deal for $11.4 million. He better be ready. And you better hope that, for his sake, for the Leafs' sake, hopefully these injuries are, you can get them behind him. And he does have a history of injuries. Leafs played 12 games in February, 14 games in March, and 15 games in April. There's back-to-backs. There's not going to be many days where there is 2 days off.
No more of this Wednesday-Saturday stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Poor Leafs lunch. It's basically going to be Al's brother just spending an hour apologizing to Kouliakabo because he bet the Bills. But this is the first one of the season for Peter Mrazek where he posted a save percentage of above 900, making 27 saves on 28 shots. Morgan Rielly, the big star, is on pace for 71 points. Shares the 5-on-5 scoring lead with Victor Hedman and Adam Fox. That's some great company. Leafs have outscored teams 39-19 when he's been on the ice at full strength. Shout out to Jonas Siegel from The Athletic for those stats that I stole. Had 3 shots in the period. Great job pressuring Matt Barzell, stealing the puck, sending it up to Marner for that goal. Some big slides, helping out his goalie. So a nice day for Morgan Rielly on Saturday. Let's hear from the coach, Sheldon Keefe, talking about his defenseman.
You take Muzzinhall out of our lineup, and not only are you relying on your younger guys to step up and take on more, but inevitably, you know, Rielly and Brody are going to take on a lot more as well. In terms of minutes go up a little bit, but also the minutes just get harder. You know, you're not sharing the D zone faceoffs like you might have, with Muzz and Holler in there. You're taking on a lot of that responsibility, special teams. There's a lot of responsibility falling on Morgan's shoulders along with Broads. And, you know, Morgan specifically is, as we've been talking about here, his game's in a really good spot, both sides of the puck. We talked about how his defending has improved and he's keeping the play in front of him. He's closing space really well, and he's doing that without taking away from his offense. And you saw that on display here in that second period, just a big-time goal.
There is 2 pieces of news with practice today. One, and probably the biggest one, not probably the biggest one, not only is Justin Hall back, but Jake Muzzin back on the ice. Now, wearing the no-contact red jersey, but after suffering the concussion, good to see him back. The most curious thing is that William Nylander is not on the first line with Matthews and Michael Bunting. He's on the third line with Kerfoot and David Kampf. And, you know, now that Andre Kasha is back, Kasha was on the first line. Pierre Engvall, who's got 10 points in his last 15 games, is on that fourth line with Spezza and Wayne Simmonds. I think the obvious thing here, Austin, is I don't think there's much to read into this. There's not a demotion on Nylander. I think this may be just, hey, let's see what it looks like. That's Sheldon keep doing some experimenting and, I guess, trying to get more of a balance in scoring between those lines.
Okay, good, because I'm worried that it was a demotion. That makes a lot more sense, just trying to get a look-see. See what it looks like in practice. I don't hate that idea at all. What about Sandin and Hall on the second pairing? That was the one for me, kind of splitting up Sandin and Liljegren. Do you think we could see that on Wednesday?
You're right. Yeah, Dermott and Liljegren are on the third one.
Oh, well, Dermott. Jeez, we could have a conversation about him, too.
Dermott deserves to be on the third line. Liljegren, the last couple games, has been out. Sandin's been the better of those two.
Definitely.
If you go back, the one goal scored by the Islanders, that was a lot of that was Zach Parise. A lot of that was Liljegren just kind of the bouncing puck sort of confounded him for a moment. He didn't look good there. So I get that. But the thing is, but the third line is Kampf and McCabe and Engvall, and again, shout out to Jonas Siegel for this. They've only played 51 minutes together, but you know they're out shooting their opponents, high danger shot attempts. They got a great advantage there. So that third line of those three had been working well. But in the end, I think this is much ado about nothing. It's about trying to get balance. And once the game starts, I think you'll see Nylander with Matthews and Bunting more than with Kampf and Kerfoot. So that's my thoughts there. On the other side, Eric Kareen is going to join us from The Athletic. We will get into the weekend that was for the Raptors, concerns about minutes, and what it's like still with no fans in attendance. That's all coming up right here on Gameplay. As you heard, the next Raptors game, Wednesday, the Chicago Bulls. DeMar DeRozan, you can listen here at TSN 1050, 8 o'clock tip-off. And then Thursday, it is Raptors Beat with Nikki Reyes and Josh Lewenberg. Also, the last segment, once again, I don't know why I keep calling the New York Islanders the St. Louis Blues. That's not even me screwing up a name. That's me just screwing up two teams. Anyway, no way to transition, so I'm not even going to try to. Eric Kareen covers the Raptors for The Athletic, is with us today. Eric, good afternoon. Thanks for joining the show.
Thanks for having me, Matt. How you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm looking outside. There's a lot of snow here. Where are you right now? Can I get a weather report? Mostly because I want to drive up north of Barrie after the show today, and I'm sort of debating that.
Yeah, I thankfully do not live north of Barrie. No offense to the people who do. It's just not for me. I'm coming to you live from East Toronto, east end of the Danforth proper, I would say. I don't want to get more specific, lest, you know, people come to my house and barrage me with Raptors questions, as would surely happen. But yeah, I'm seeing the similar snow. There were some big flakes. We let our dog out for a moment, and he was in short time covered in said flakes. But the flakes appear to be getting smaller, and I think we're going to be okay, man.
Everybody, go to Danforth in Maine. Look for Eric Kareen and ask him lots of questions about the Toronto Raptors. Let's start with just sort of a bigger sort of philosophical one. Every day, I think most of us worry a little bit about the minutes, and then we see what does a team look like late, and oh God, they're shooting poorly. But at some point, do we have to just give up our fear and give the coach and the players the benefit of the doubt, or is the concern that coaches are control freaks who want to win every game? Like I've been going back and forth on this one, Eric, about how I should be feeling about the heavy minutes for players like Van Vliet and Siakam.
I mean, I think if you're just, you know, for your mental health state, there are probably better things to worry about. But
no, nope, that's probably, it. This is number one. This is number
probably,
one. We all know it.
Yeah, that's probably why we watch sports, so we don't have to think about the real things that we should be worrying about, at least in part. I think it's a very real concern. And, you know, I've been tweeting a bunch, which is always a mistake. But like the Raptors have been pretty bad offensively over the last few games since the Phoenix game. And that's sort of when the minutes of the Raptors, you know, top 3-4 players have always been high, but that's really when they've gone into overdrive. And it's tempting to want to say there's causation here. I think, you know, it's reasonable to assume that's part of things, but not all of things. But yeah, you've got to worry long-term about these guys. You know, whenever a team is the most extreme of 30 on relying on its, you know, top-end players, I mean, that bears observation, certainly. And the one thing I always want to emphasize when talking about minutes or talking about health, because, you know, both Dwayne Casey and Nick Nurse at times have relied on their best players, like a few other teams, is the Raptors internally have a lot more metrics other than minutes played that will determine how heavy a load a player has at any given time. So by definition, we know a lot less about what these guys are going through than the team does, but it's concerning, and it's especially concerning when the Raptors have a more compressed second half than other teams because they have three games to make up that were postponed in the first half. So I think there's a middle ground, as I usually do, as you know, Matt. That's why you come have me on for these
That's
unsatisfactory
right.
answers. I think, you know, we don't have to just wave it away, but you also have to give some credit to an organization that has dealt with these sort of things before.
You are MVP.
Hot takes from Eric Kareen, for Raptors reporter for The Athletic. Yeah, and I am sort of going back and forth between giving the benefit of the doubt, but then, you know, we see the impact of heavy minutes, what it can have. Let's see, do we stick with Raptors or bigger concern, wealth inequality or climate crisis? Which way would you like to go, Eric?
I am tremendously underqualified to talk about the latter.
All right. Well, then. Well, that's up to you, because man, I had some doozies of a question for you. Just the last week or so, how frustrating is it as a Raptor fan when you see them, you see the Raptors beat the Bucks with a pretty healthy Bucks team and having leads late against the Suns, the Heat, and the Mavs, and they were a couple shots away from winning some of those games, and then the other end losing, getting blown out by Detroit and what we saw against Portland. I mean, as a Leaf fan, how difficult is this? Just sort of. There's no sort of stability, it seems, right now with them.
I'd even throw in the first quarter and change against Washington, right? Like that was a bad quarter of basketball, and they were run off the floor, and they made their way back into it, and props to them. It's when you're talking about an undermanned team or a team with a smaller rotation, I think there are, by definition, going to be nights like that the quality of focus just isn't quite there. So it's all, you know, it's easy to say you beat Milwaukee if you had that same effort and focus a night earlier. You beat Detroit too, but the nature of an 82 game season is that there will be nights like that. I don't think it frustrates me that much.
Oh, not you. And you're an emotion. You have zero emotion. You've got ice in your veins.
That's what the drugs are for. They just get rid of the emotions. But I do understand the frustration, certainly, and sort of comes back to the minutes question, because they play in a way on defense that is so taxing that you wonder about the cumulative effect, not necessarily in terms of being susceptible to injury, but to be able to do that night in and night out and still have a passable offense. I mean, the offense is clearly what has struggled most recently, both in like the close games or wins against very good teams or in the big losses. Like the defense just hasn't been there. The offense just hasn't been there. And the defense has, you know, either been fine or been done in by offense, by turnovers on offense. So
yeah,
I think it's hard to separate all these, the first and the second question you asked me for me. So, I don't think it's an effort thing. I do think there is some question of how sustainable all of this is, not only the minutes, but the style with so few players. That's a legitimate question, I think.
How much can the offense get better just through internal improvement in health?
I think it can, you know, going into the season, it was easy to speculate that the half court offense would be the weakest part of this team. And, you know, despite them being, I believe, 12th in offensive rating and 18th in defensive rating, I think that's true. Like they've been a bottom 10, bottom 5 half court offense team all year long. And it's really the second chances and the sheer number of turnovers they're creating and transition opportunities they're creating that is allowing them to rise to that level overall offensively. So I think it's limited, this roster. I think there are some things to do. I really like the looks with Scotty Barnes as a screener. I think that would naturally, we saw that a lot against Washington. And the Raptors are in a weird place. When they start small, they don't necessarily know who's going to be guarding who. So when Washington had their center on Scottie Barnes, it made sense to screen with Scottie Barnes. And if Portland doesn't throw Yusuf Nurkic onto Barnes and they are putting him on OG or they're putting him on Siakam, it's not as easy a thing to do, because if a center is not involved, there's more likely to be switching and then you lose the power of that screen. Saying that, I think there are more two-man actions and two-man action combos beyond just Van Vliet and Siakam in one combination or another to employ, even though, you know, Van Vliet and Siakam are the two guys you want in your actions most often.
Yeah.
But I do think that Barnes passing can really be activated by using him as a screener a bit more.
That's
the first thing that jumps to mind.
Yeah. Oh, no, I agree. From a betting perspective, there was a run where if you just took the player prop, took the Scottie Barnes over assists, you were winning that on more nights than you weren't. And, you know, we've seen that since the first game of the year against Washington. We're joined by Eric Kareen from The Athletic. Nick Nurse talking about no fans, says it sucks. He went on to say it sucks. It does. It sucks. It's, you know, you got to read between the lines of his thoughts. Maybe we can delve a little bit into the emotion going on there. But I'm curious your thoughts on what that the environment is like.
I mean, it's not good. It's an empty arena with fake noise, and it's bizarre. And I imagine coming off a 5-game road trip in which you played in some pretty, you know, loud gyms, it takes a lot to get used to it. Saying that, they're doing it more than any other team, so it's not really an excuse for, you know, yes, for Sunday. I think that, you know, that was a bizarre game for a number of reasons, and I do think there was a large degree of luck involved. Like, I didn't think that was actually among the Raptors' worst efforts of the year. I thought the first quarter against Washington was worse. But, you know, there are moments, like who knows how loud when the Raptors were making their comeback in the fourth quarter, that crowd would have been. Does that keep Ben McLemore from hitting every open corner three he takes? Does that, you know, make it harder for Nazir Little, who's playing great for Portland, to, you know, hit some of those in-between shots? Maybe. But it's not, you know, and I phrased this, I said it when I asked it to Nick Nurse, like, it's obviously not an excuse, but it doesn't take a level of an adjustment. So I think that's where we are. Like, the Raptors can't rely on it, on crowd to pick them up. They should know that better than anybody. But as Nurse said, like, it's still a bummer. It does not feel like the rest of the games feel. So, yeah, not fun. But the concourses, I can't tell you how much room I have in them when I'm walking around the building. It's been great.
Secretly, how much do you love the fact that there are no fans there?
It does a lot for my COVID anxiety. Like, that's good. Yeah. Like, the one game I didn't go to this year at home was the game, I think it was against Golden State, when they still had 6,000 or 7,000 fans coming in, and Omicron numbers were on the rise. I'm like, this is going to a shutdown soon. I'm going to watch this one from home and then get used to it. So for now, like, I do like it, but I mean, I empathize with all the players and coaches. Like, I definitely miss it. It's not at all like everybody's favorite in-game experience has to do with a crowd, you know, either being silenced or making an absurd amount of noise. So I like it in one way, but definitely overall, I miss it, and hopefully we're in a position where they can safely fill the arena again by, I guess, March 14th would be the date that they're looking for, for that.
Yeah, and last one, I was going to ask, if God is good, how come bad things happen to good people? I'll save that for next time. I'm joined by Eric Kareen from The Athletic. Why are they still doing a lot of the songs and music and just the in-game thing? Like, is that for the players? Is that just out of habit?
It's got to be. Because if they were, you know, I would love right now for them to lean into it and not play anything and be able to hear the shoes squeaking and be able to hear some talk between the players, even though, you know, who knows what might come out of that. That's what 7 second delays are for, I would counter. But I think there is certainly something that to the fact that they want players to feel that this is as normal as possible. I will say, after the first song post game is done, so like the song you'll hear once the Raptors win or lose, instead of them continuing to play songs, the system just goes off. Like, there's no more audio, and like the silence is like so pleasurable, because usually you're just hearing that thumping or that music for, as you know, 3 or 4 songs, I would say. Now you just get the one and then it goes silent. And if you're filing on deadline or just thinking about what to write, it is very, it's nice. But yeah, I would say the reason is the players.
Yeah. Well, I do hope eventually we get to a place where your commute gets worse and it's super loud and it makes it difficult for you to write articles, because at least it means then we got a full barn. Eric, always appreciate taking the time. And, yeah, if you do take your dog out for another walk, be prepared for snow on your dog when it comes back inside.
Will do, Matt. Be well, and appreciate you having me on.
Absolutely. Take care. That is Eric Karin. Read his work in The Athletic, covering all things Raptors and sometimes things beyond. On the other side, actually, we'll stick with the NBA and NHL. Look at some games going, big games going on tonight, and if there's any bets and plays that we are sort of leaning towards. That's coming up in a moment right here on Gameplay. Welcome back, everybody. This is Gameplay. I'm your host, Matthew Kaz. The Vegas Golden Knights taking on Washington. Vegas is plus 105 favorite on the road in Washington. Capitals have lost 7 of the last 9, 4 of their last 7 games at home. Caps have given up 3 or more goals in 7 of their last 9 games. Meanwhile, Vegas, they've won 6 straight on the road, playing fairly well offensively, scoring 3 or more goals in 5 of those 6 road games. So because like the line is so close, I kind of like just take Vegas at plus 105 against the Caps. Any thoughts by you there, producer Austin?
Yeah, I like Vegas, and I unfortunately forgot to put the over-under in the rundown, Matt. That's my bad. It's 5.5. I like the over on that, too. Both teams are scoring really well right now. Be interested to see what Andy McNeil says on that one, because to me, that's the game of the night. There are some other good ones, though, as well.
And we'll talk to Andy McNeil at, what's the time? He's 3 o'clock?
Up next, baby, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. We got Sean King at 3:30 as well, former NFL quarterback. On the NBA side, I know that they're winning, and they had a close win against Houston, but Steph Curry, if you look at his last month, this is a legit slump. This is not just this. I don't know what happened since Klay Thompson has come back. But anyway, you've got Utah taking on Golden State. At the very least, I like the under in this game. The shooting slump going on, Donovan Mitchell being out of the lineup. The over-under is set at 219.5. I like the under between Golden State and Utah, two of the better defensive teams in the league.
Yeah, all over that too with you, Matt. The Steph Curry thing's really interesting, though, because it really kind of, I thought the MVP race was over after the first month, honestly. I kind of stopped looking at the odds. I kind of stopped paying attention. But I think it's opened right back up, because with this shooting slump from Steph Curry, they might not finish first. They might not even finish second in the Western Conference. I think that awards race is it's really going to heat up here down the stretch.
Yeah. And
especially now with Durant out, it's not only a two-horse race. Like, I think you could kind of have what you had last year after LeBron went out.
Well, and LeBron's numbers are getting better. Like, his MVP odds is he's playing better. That's, you know, something to keep in mind. But, yeah, no, it is. It's wide open. Durant kind of take himself out of it just with that injury. But it's Giannis. It's Jokic. It's going to be Embiid. You know, like I said, LeBron lurking around and Steph Curry. So, yeah.
Well, we talked about this, Matt. Chris Paul.
Yes.
If the Suns can finish first, I really think there's a strong narrative case for Chris Paul to be made. Whether or not the statistical argument is there, I'm not completely sure.
I think, again, they got to win, and he's got to basically play the whole season and lead the NBA in assists. If he does that, then I think, you know, I think he's got a decent chance. We don't talk a lot of tennis just because, you know, a lot of the big stars are out. A lot of the big stars are losing. But Denis Shapovalov and Felix Auger-Aliassime are both moving on. This is the first time where two men in the quarterfinals are going on. And at the same time, it's the first time two Canadians have done it in the same year, with Shapovalov and Aliassime both reaching the quarters of the Aussie Open. Now for Aliassime, he's taking on the number two ranked player, Daniil Medvedev, while on the other side, Shapovalov is taking on Nadal. So we know how it usually is with tennis. We've gone through this era where there's been almost no upsets. Do you put any money on this? Shapovalov is plus 235 against Nadal's at minus 290. Felix is 23 to 1 to win the tournament. Shapovalov is 19 to 1. Is this one of those cases where you feel a little Canadian and you put down
Matt,
a couple Canadian
dollars?
How did you know?
The patriotic angle got me again. I got FAA actually at 36 to 1 the entire tournament before his quarterfinal matchup against that Serbian player whose last name I will not even attempt to say. But
you mean Medvedev?
No. Medvedev is that's a Russian player number one, and he's playing him in the quarterfinals. The player that Felix Aliassime beat last round after being down one set. Live bet that as well. FAA, my boy. I'm also liking Shapo. Shapo burst on the scene here, beating Rafael Nadal at the Rogers Cup in Toronto. I think he can do it again in Australia, the land down under. You're right, Matt. We don't see a lot of upsets in tennis. We need a new generation led by these two Canadians. It starts this year.
What made you decide you wanted to say the land down under? What was the motivation behind throwing that in there?
I get tired of saying Australia. I didn't want to say Melbourne because, you know, it's a little too specific. So I was looking for synonyms for it. And, I didn't want to say the land by the Great Barrier Reef because then I'm losing people, too, with my geography. It's land down under it is.
Okay. All right. Maybe a tribute to Men Without Hats. Going to the NFL because we got a couple of minutes before we got to go to break. Can I get the Kansas City Chiefs coach, Andy Reid, his advice to his quarterback, Patrick Mahomes, when the team was down by 3 with 13 seconds left?
You still have time to get the field goal, but it looks pretty grim there. What, you have any special advice to Pat right there? Do you have any words for him at that point when Buffalo took the lead for the last time?
Yeah, when it's grim, be the grim reaper and go get it. So he did that. He went, he made everybody around him better, which he is great at, and you know, he just does it effortlessly.
I love that. When things are grim, be the grim reaper. It's a hell of a line. Also, man, it's good as a head coach when your quarterback is Patrick Mahomes. And again, we are sending it out there that the NFL needs to just tell Cincinnati to go home. They've had a great year. They've won 2 playoff games. And then next Sunday, it's a rematch between Buffalo and Kansas City. And if Buffalo wins that, they have the trilogy instead of the Pro Bowl. I think I could get 100% people on board on this one. And what do you want, the Pro Bowl or the Chiefs and the Bills?
Chiefs and the Bills, winner. What does the winner get, though? There has to be some sort of advantage. I think they win the Super Bowl, right?
Yeah. No. They get to go to the Super Bowl.
You can't just discount the AFC completely either.
Yeah, no, you can't discount the NFC. We'll let the winner of the Rams and San Fran. But the only real loser here is Kansas City. Like, wait a minute, we just did it. We survived that team. What do you mean we got to play again? I'm like, sorry, Mahomes, sorry, Andy. For the benefit of the rest of the world, this is what we want.
Yeah, three games the Chiefs and Bills have played, though. Kansas City, 100 points, Bills, 98. So it can't get much closer, Matt. I'd love to see it again.
Exactly. I don't want to have to wait a year for that. On the other side, Andy McNeil is going to join us, and we're going to get into all things gambling on hockey, looking ahead a little bit with the Leafs' next game, get his thoughts on their win against the New York Islanders, not the St. Louis Blues. I almost did that. There's no reason why I'm calling the Islanders St. Louis Blues. Even for me, that one is dumb. Our NHL gambling analyst, Andy McNeil, in just a moment, but first, traffic.